The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1 with Elavon Merchant Services. Growing your business is easy peasy with us by your side.
At 9:30, 515-51 is the text number. We have at last, I think we're comfortably now in 2022. It's fine, and we're definitely past the Happy New Year phase, in case anyone was wondering. And we now look at a whole new range of uncertainties around us. I mean, this is something that has crossed all of our minds in the last 2 years about children in school, out of school, coming or going, homework, no homework. Do we take them out? Do we put them in? Taking an antigen test before you go to work. I mean, that's the new worry. When every time I take an antigen test, I kind of look at it going, geez, are we going? Oh, it's a pit in my stomach. Should you book a holiday? Can you afford a holiday? If you are going, can you go abroad? And if you go abroad, if you get trapped when you get there and you're stuck and you have to pay for the hotel, it's constant niggling uncertainty that seems to be, it can be destructive if you're not in the right frame of mind, which is why I want to talk to Dr. Jonathan Egan. Good morning, Jonathan. Good to talk to you again.
Good morning, Ryan.
And you're at the NUI Galway Psychology Department, and that's why we wanted to ask you on this morning to talk about uncertainty. Is there a dictionary psychological definition of the word uncertainty as a matter of interest?
As usual, there are many, but it's a tendency for you as a person to consider the possibility of a negative event occurring as unacceptable, as threatening, irrespective of the probability of its occurrence. So it's for you, Ryan, considering something in the future and then thinking a negative event might occur or the event might not occur, and then you feeling that this is unacceptable and threatening, irrespective of the chance of recurring.
Yes. So let's say I say I want to go to Iceland, which I've been trying to go for 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always wanted to go. I've never been before. I'm reading loads of fiction about it and all the rest of it. And I was all very excited about trying to go.
Yeah.
And every time I think I might go, I'll say, well, if I get... My uncertainty is if I go there and I'd say three or four nights, because I'd have to come back for TV commitments, obviously.
Okay, yeah.
And then I go, if I get, for whatever reason, it's highly unlikely, but if I got, say, the virus over there, I had to self-isolate for 5 days or seven days, whatever it might be, then I'm in trouble over here work-wise. And, you know, so therefore I just say, well, I can't take the risk. But that's, look, this is a first world, very comfortable sense of uncertainty. I'm not talking, we'll get into the heavier stuff in a minute. But that's, as you say, that's an example of it.
An example. So it's really broken down to two types of things. One is prospective anxiety, which you're describing there, Ryan. It's that it'll frustrate you to look ahead and not be able to be sure that you'll be able to present on the Late Late Show or on in the morning. That you want to be sure about your future. And you can't be given that right now during Omicron. And the second one is what's called inhibitory anxiety. And this is more important, really. This is yourself. And that's it's uncertainty keeps me from living a full life. Now, if that is a problem, if one of your true desires is to go to Iceland, I'd ask you to really sit down with yourself and go, you know, if you really plan and consider all the planning options, such as bringing a good laptop, bringing a good headphones, that you could actually do it in Iceland. I'm sure they've got Wi-Fi in Iceland. That you'd be able to cover the radio part. So maybe the time of week you travel over and have a shorter trip might be more feasible. Yeah. But it's about, are you stopping yourself? Are you getting into analysis paralysis? So if that occurs, that's not healthy. And what usually is good is talk to a mentor or a peer who, you know, who's done this type of thing, who maybe has traveled and can be a bit of a guide to you, a mentor. Mm. And that will help you explore your options, the pros and cons, in a more... See, when we get frightened, we go into black or white thinking. It's all adrenaline, noradrenaline, cortisol. And we get into brain fog, and we can't think creatively. We can't think. I'll be safe or in danger. That's what happens to our thinking process.
So take it to then a more realistic and practical level for people about, for example, schools. And this isn't a conversation about the school story in Ireland today, but it's more about the psychology behind that, as you know, Jonathan.
Yeah.
And you know, parents going, should I, you know, particularly with Omicron, you're going, Omicron's quite a tricky proposition, because it's not, as I said yesterday, it doesn't strike me as being a variant of destruction, but rather one of disruption. And the point I'm making is that you say, well, if I send my kids in, the chances are they might get it. And I'm still a bit confused as to whether or not schools are safe, because that's messaging there has been a little bit peculiar. And do they bring it home? And if they bring it home, can I keep a child in a room for 10 hours? Are we all going to get it? And then what about granny who's got an underlying illness? Yeah. See, this is it. This is probably the thought process for so many people.
Yeah.
And it's contagious.
Yeah, it's contagious. And in fact, if you think about it, you know, a couple of months ago, only 2% of the tests, the PCR tests, were coming back positive, which meant probably about 70% of us were developing neurotic kind of, well, not neurotic, the government was telling us to focus on certain symptoms. focus on certain symptoms. And because of that, then we start focusing on whether we've got find it difficult to swallow, shortness of breath, if we've got headaches, if we've got pains in our muscles. And what we do is we focus on that. And if you ask somebody to focus on maybe like swallowing 6 times in a row over the next 5 minutes, it's very hard to do. But then you suddenly go, oh, God, I feel a bit of a what we call globus, a ball in your throat, or maybe a cream of ale if you're my mouth is in my throat, or the French would say there's a frog in my throat. So we develop these psychosomatic things when we start to focus. It's a bit like if you hold your mobile phone for too long to your ear, you suddenly get this pain in your arm, and you wonder, well, isn't this tingling? And because you've probably been resting on your ulnar nerve, and your arm goes a bit numb. So when we get tense and worried about things, our whole body tenses up, both at the muscular level, but then also at our gastrointestinal level. So people are prone to maybe migraine, bladder, frequency need to go to the toilet, people with IBS syndrome, that all worsens. And people have your own. For me, it would be more like maybe under very severe stress, well, I might get a bit nauseous, I might get a migraine, rarely, a few times a year. But for some people, that gets triggered. And we know that people who've had very maybe environments where they grew up, where they weren't really met as a child and weren't cared for and they weren't soothed, they are more likely to develop these things later on during maybe a COVID pandemic.
So uncertainty, by what you've said there, if I'm not mistaken, can translate into a physical realization of the psychological struggle.
Yeah, so the psychological struggle we all have is that if you draw a triangle on a piece of paper with the point at the bottom, so it's standing on the apex there, mm-hmm. and if you put down at the bottom of the triangle, like Ryan, my name is Ryan, mm-hmm. am I being self-compassionate? Do I have joy in my life? Am I able to access sadness? Am I able to have a good cry if I'm feeling sad? Am I able to access anger if I'm feeling losing somebody, you've lost somebody or someone's died? Can I access both anger and sadness? Can I access, now this is a big one, hope. Because we recently saw in the Irish Times that about 20% of Irish people don't have hope anymore.
That's a big number.
Because we're the most optimistic in the world, despite the relevant facts. And then closeness, which is a huge one. During the pandemic, we haven't been able to be close and we haven't been able to meet and hug and look in the eyes. When you go diving with somebody, you will cope much better and cope with the breathing aspect of diving if you treat the person by looking at the eyes and the nonverbal reactions. And then with grief, it means that you have to be able to cope with both sadness and anger. So during a pandemic, if you can't access any of those things, and vitality yourself, doing things which you know we enjoy doing, whether it's going to the cinema like you and I on our own or with other people, and if you can't access any of those, what happens is anxiety goes up. And it's kind of saying to us, you know, Ryan, you're not being yourself. You start to worry about it. You might start to get irritable and fight with people. You might start to clench your teeth or grind them at night. I recommend everyone go to the dentist and get their yearly check at the moment because you've probably been tensing your teeth. And also shame and guilt build up. And if that's not managed, Ryan, we start to go into this ruminating, this withdrawal from other people, emotional eating, which a lot of us did. Mm-hmm. And then we moved on to emotional shopping. And now we're moving into other things such as getting irritable with people, such as the example you gave with the person with the fridge. You know, so if they came into my therapy room, I would say, okay, let's we'll talk about it. We'll hear the full story. And I go, let's just stop there. Let's really just sit down and think, okay, what's happening inside you? Are you happy? Are there people that you can talk to? Is there anybody who's died that we need to talk about in the last 10 years? Well, let's go back 10 years, you know. Do you feel close to people? Do you have hope? What's your sense of who you are as a person? What direction in life? What gives you vitality? For you and I, not being able to go to the cinema was a huge hit at our vitality level. And you know, there's things like we talked the last time, Jerusalem came in and gave a cream of ale. I had what's called globus hystericus, is where our ability to swallow or breathe kind of gets limited based on grief or nostalgia. Yeah. And I was watching with the children last night clips of what movies we planned to see. The hope was still there. Yeah. And we looked at, because they're 11, 9 and 7, two boys and a girl. And we started looking at clips at scene 2, and my goodness, Jerusalem hit me again. Bono is the key protagonist, one of the key protagonists with Scarlett Johansson.
Yes, yes.
She played Ash the Porcupine. And when Stuck in a Moment came on, I think maybe we've all been stuck in a moment for 2 years, a lot of us.
Yeah.
U2 song, Stuck in a Moment, that we've just gotten stuck, that we haven't been able to dislodge, that we're stuck down on the ground, and that we need someone to come along and pick us up and say, come on with me. And for some of us to get stuck in and to get back into our vitality, we need someone up here. Like I said to you, if you're planning to go to Iceland, someone will take your hand and go, come here, I'll show you the way. And you can tell your decision in the end. But then at the end of the movie, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. And then that really hit me, because I lectured to usually last time I was meant to lecture to 250 students. And I was looking forward to going into to the lectern and looking up at the 250, maybe 180 would arrive. Mm. But I discovered I was COVID positive.
Lord, sorry to hear that.
Today. And the whole family are COVID positive.
Oh, Lord, okay.
But I started to think that a lot of people have not been able to do that teenage, young adult thing of looking for finding what they're looking for.
Yeah.
They're moving away, taking the skin of their family off, and through discourse, through love, through joy, through drinking a beer or a wine and chatting about things and ideas, that this, their selfhood has been diminished. And their uncertainty, because you have to kind of a trajectory, don't you, in your mind, a map where to go.
This is it. I think that when this started, and a year, 14 months into it, it was a lot easier to say, we're going to get vaccinated and we're out the door. And I felt very, very confident in saying that at the time. And now as I see people saying, this is my second birthday,
yeah,
not being able to do this. I think if people are of a certain age, they're they're going to be very wistful about, you know, time and as time elapses. And then people with, you know, people getting married. I know this is really important. And then hitting 17, 18, 21, all these big events. You know what I'm talking about, essentially. And that's before we even get to the sadness of those quiet funerals. And I think that as we head towards 2 years of this, you mentioned a word there I wrote down, which was irritability. Initially, we could probably put up with a bit of it, but people have become increasingly irritable, and the lack of patience. Whether it's with, I mean, I was in the chemist. I was saying this before Christmas, and the staff gathered round. There were about six of them gathered round to talk to me and said, "Would you please ask your listeners to be patient with people who are working behind the counter?" I couldn't believe it, and they really were. I could see they were upset in their eyes because they were obviously being treated really badly by people who are lacking hope, 20%, who are lacking certainty, which is why we're here today, Jonathan. And you know, so it is a phenomenon, I think, and it's not just us talking gobbledygook.
Well, think of the antithesis of that. I had a healthcare shock over the summer, but after getting over it and all the operations needed to occur, I went and thanked the team and gave them some wine and chocolate. And I could see lips starting to move and tears in the eyes. And I said, hang on, do you guys not get thanks? I said, you've been a great team. It was the maxillofacial team in University Hospital Galway and the nurses. And do you not get thanks? You got praise. And they just kind of, they shook their heads. And I said, that's what the example you're saying at a lower case where people are less in severe need in a pharmacy, hopefully, but whereas compared to people visiting or being in the hospital. So the anger is coming out. Now, if we think about it from attachment theory, when we're not being met as a person, when our needs emotionally aren't being met, which, for example, women who are going in to have babies and their partner can't be there, the partner's part of the system, and the system of the way we think about it is wrong. It's like I remember meeting the neonatologist in UHG, and he's saying, well, what do you think? I said, well, the mother, there's no such thing as a baby, and there's no such thing as a mother. There's a mother and baby, as Winnicott would say, or as Bowie and that would say. It's that's the system you're looking at. So a lot of people's emotional closeness needs aren't being met, and what we do is become very angry. The second way we get angry is being frustrated at not being able to meet the goals, and that's for me particularly a big it's where I'm not able to get into my lecture, which I love to do, and I want to inspire the students and get their mojo going, their juices flowing, and their thinking flowing to really aliven them, and that's really hard to do on a Zoom. And so that's also another thing, people at work on Zoom all the time, it doesn't really stand in. It's a bit like the Emperor's New Clothes. We can't really, that's why I feel for teachers. So people can give out about teachers, but they've been asked to go into a classroom where they know there might be 25 people and there might be some room ventilation. But these children, as we know from the 8 to 12-year-olds, are carrying a lot more of the Omicron virus. So I can actually feel they have a right to be that anxious, you know? And it's a bit like they've all read The Emperor's New Clothes as a child. And it'll stick in their craw that, you know, that you know, hang on, I've been put in a bit like the nurses. I've been put in that place now. That's my turn now, so please. I think we need to be more caring, more compassionate, and go, they have a bit of a hard deal at the moment. And the science isn't really that well there, you know. They haven't done RCTs at schools with and without, you know. So we have to be more compassionate, as you're saying, and to catch yourself. If you're about to bite, say, okay, what am I missing? Am I missing love? Am I missing my vitality? I'm not able to play bridge online. That's why I'm in a bark at the pharmacy behind the counter.
I'm absolutely. There's in other developments, like a couple of texts have come in talking about young people and climate change and eco-anxiety. Yeah. Now, there'll be people listening and going, I've never heard the like in my life. But actually, for this generation, it's very serious because people like me and older people, and many, won't be around to pick up the pieces that we've left behind, as it were, whereas that's their job as the generation incoming and their children and their grandchildren, obviously. But eco-anxiety, you know, we're talking about uncertainty. There's one of the greatest global uncertainties of them all.
Well, definitely. And for me, when I grew up in the 80s in Blackrock in Dublin, what we used to talk as children to each other about, the parents didn't know this, was the nuclear bomb.
The
nuclear war. What would we do? If you're a teenager at 13, you hadn't kissed them, who would you kiss first in the group? All these kind of questions. You know, what would you do? What would you do if you only had 24 hours to live? For them, it's a more distal and abstract and more uncertain future, as we're talking uncertainty. So it's more difficult. And it's kind of the scientists coming out with these facts. And the children are getting, obviously, in the idealist phase of life, wanting to do something about it and feeling the chagrin of the governments, you know, as governments do, just taking a long time to it's like it's a giant ship to yacht towards another direction. But I suppose, and that's reality. So it's the reality testing is there. And there's something about adults talking to the kids and going, you know, adults don't know it all, really.
Sure. That is the great revelation of getting older, is we know less and less than we ever thought anyone ever knew.
Yeah. It's like watching the thing with his kids. And we all cuddle up on the couch because four of us out of the five have COVID. And my little kid went, isn't this great, Daddy? Isn't this great? Yeah. Isn't this great? And I went, yeah, it is. This really is great. And so it's about making lemonade
out of lemon. Let me take another comment. My husband won't go on holidays or spend money on anything that's not completely necessary, as he's afraid we won't be able to afford it. We have three children in college and he is self-employed, so his income is not set. But he's making life miserable for all of us. How can I convince him to at least take a holiday? We won't starve. Because he's worried about the uncertainty of the money.
Yeah. Well, see, some people, and particularly people who are in business, they go into what Stephen Hopfall in the UK would talk about, conservation of resources. It's like, stall the digger, nothing's happening until I know exactly what's going to happen.
Mm.
And it's almost like in a caravan in the desert, all the caravan gets together and protects itself. So he's stuck in that place, whereas other people in the family aren't. They're in an exploratory position. They want to use some of their capital towards exploration. So there's something about sitting down with the as a family and saying, look, it's okay, we all have our needs here. What can we manage here? Many of us, if we're clever, in the last year, even if we had very little money, planned little holidays, maybe 6 or 7, maybe for 2 days here, but made sure that we had to have a guarantee from the hotel or something that if we couldn't go because of the government restrictions or someone in our family was suspected of having COVID or close contact, that we could cancel without losing money.
Mm.
So there's those types of clever ways of looking at the system and manipulating it so that the anxious people in the family can move into a little bit of a... And it's a bit like the people who are vaccine hesitant. Remember, they're frightened. Uncertainty is related to anxiety. It's related to catastrophic thinking. I'm going to die if I take this vaccine. Because I've heard from somebody that their son died or their daughter died. And they're hooked to that one story. And that one story can speak like a picture, 1,000 words, and can really frighten people. And if you're prone to anxiety or obsessive compulsive, rumination, where you think that your action could have a catastrophic reaction in your family or without you, that's really, that's a reality for them. So it's about, you know, being open to people, meeting them in the eyes. I think this on the phone stuff might work as well as looking in the eyes and somebody says, okay, I can hear where you're coming from. That seems completely reasonable.
Yeah.
Can I tell you about what I know? And you know, but don't try and shove something down people's
throats. Well, there's an increasing commentary about that now. I noticed in the Irish and the UK papers in the last few days being, look, there's a bunch of people who just aren't going to take this thing. And we just have to march on now. And rather than demonise them, just get on with it and coexist and say, that's where you are. We've done as much as we can. We've knocked on every door in the neighbourhood. You're just not going to take it. So we just have to accept this. This is it.
Yeah.
All right. You know, rather than fighting each other, let's just get on with it and get to the next bit. Well, it's important. It's important. I think people working in hospitals will tell you the numbers. Who are sick, and we won't get into it now. Other than to say there has to be a sense of living now together and getting on.
It's a bit like if we attacked and shamed somebody who's self harming. And they came to hospital and said, "Who had the cuts get there? I cut myself."
Well, there's I'm sure it's there's an element to that. But let me ask you before we go. You got COVID positive. You're sitting there with the kids. There's something I know from socially isolating. At least this Christmas, I found the joy in it. Will you find the joy now in your family isolation?
Yeah, I think the looking at clips of things too last night. I think we need to do that. We need Bono to get on there and talk about how he got involved. And Scarlett Johansson asked him apparently she was playing Ash the Porcupine to get used as that 7 U2 song. So the sense of pride, national pride, when I was watching.
That's so fun. I'll give him a call and see what he has to say about Sing 2.
Yeah.
And okay, that's
Bono,
that's next.
Please come on. We need a bit of a
give us a lift.
And explain
to what the hell you're doing in that film. All right, Jonathan. Listen, go well, and I look forward to talking. We'll talk to you in a few months' time and see what's happening. But thanks for your time this morning.
Take care, everyone.
Take care of yourself. All right, we'll be back shortly.